the Allstate Skyline Studio.
WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this edition of the Sunday Spin for April the 21st, 2019. A very happy Easter, everyone. Welcome, as always, to our weekly look at the world of politics and policy, going from City Hall to the State House and all the way on to the White House. So, time to grab that Sunday paper, get that hot cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to get your week off to a great start. Speaking of great start, Dave, could you repeat that weather forecast?
I would be happy to. As Tom Skilling is reporting in his weather forecast this morning, we could see one of the warmest Easters on record as temperatures soar. That's his word, soar.
Soar.
Temperatures going up into the mid to upper 70s area wide. We could see a high of 80 in places. Mild tonight, lows in the 50s. Again for tomorrow, partly cloudy, a high in the 70s, maybe an isolated thunderstorm, but I love that temperature reading.
Wow.
70s, maybe 80 today? Yes, sir.
It's too bad we can't go back in the Wayback Machine so you could play the forecast you were reading last Sunday.
I much prefer reading this one.
Wow.
compared to last week at this time.
Last Sunday was perhaps as a miserable day as I can recall.
Oh, that was January in April is what it was.
Well, and I had come to work in my gym shoes, and it was like a little sprinkle of rain at, 5 a.m. or whatever.
Yeah.
And I still, looking out these windows here and seeing a blizzard outside at 8 o'clock, and, get home, there's 3 inches of slush on the sidewalks. It was just miserable.
Yeah, my cousin sent me a picture. She and her husband were driving in the Elgin area, and it looked like 3 or 4 inches of just solid snow on the ground out that way.
And, well, it was one of those things, because when you hear, snow in April, you're thinking, yeah, okay, it'll maybe
exactly
flurries for an hour, and then it'll melt, and it kept going. Oh. And as you said, there were too many traffic incidents to even report.
Yeah, we simply couldn't get to them all. And there was a portion of I-80 that was closed for a while. Again, I'll repeat this. Everything's fine this morning.
Yeah, but
a portion of I-80 closed just because of the amount of cars in the ditch on the side of the road. Very hazardous, slick conditions. As I said, January and April.
Yeah, it was...
that slush was gathering on the trees, and I was walking back to my house, and I have a street that's very tree-lined, and it was like dodging bombs falling out of the trees. It hurt. I mean, it would fall on your head. It was like, oh, man, it stings a little bit.
Well, and even on Monday morning downtown with the kind of slush bombs coming off the building.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was slush bombs. Yes,
beware. Gotta wear that batting helmet to work.
Yeah.
Well, it's true. Yeah. I mean, and it would hit and splatter, and it was like somebody was dropping water balloons off the. But contrast that to today, glorious sunshine overlooking the lake and here in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Just beautiful. Just beautiful out. About perfect.
Andy and I got some
Easter.
Great pictures of the sunrise over Navy Pier. It was fantastic.
Well, I hope you post them.
We were fighting for window space. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll post mine later.
Yeah, well, we'll have Casera post one up, too.
Okay.
As well. So that's great. Oh, man. Well, I've been watching a lot of Stanley Cup hockey.
Me too.
Because there's nothing better than playoff hockey.
I agree with you completely.
And yeah, of course, the Hawks aren't there. I understand. But just some fantastic games. And I think here's a warning to people who may like to bet on sports.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, I'm rooting for all the Canadian teams.
Right.
And what has happened now? We've lost Calgary's out.
Lost Winnipeg yesterday.
Winnipeg yesterday, which really hurts because Winnipeg lost to the Blues.
Yeah, that was a bad one.
And actually, the Blues were a lower seed, I believe.
They were.
Winnipeg.
They were.
And what I think I saw the beginning of the end, which I think might have been Thursday night in that series, where it was 2-2 in the third period, and with 15 seconds left, St. Louis got the game winner. That was kind of like foreshadowing everything right there. And that was in Winnipeg. In fact, this was the first home game, St. Louis winning yesterday. It was the first home game in the series, I believe, that the home team won.
Yeah, they had all the visiting teams had gone to the other's building and won. And today you'll have a chance to see perhaps the Maple Leafs advance. That's a nice Toronto team.
Yes, so there's still Canadian the Maple team. Leafs are still in it against against Boston. But, I mean, it just you think of even this first round, Tampa Bay, the best record in the NHL, losing four straight to Columbus. I mean,
how about that?
That's amazing.
And Calgary out, as you mentioned, to the Avalanche. So both top seeds in each conference are out.
And then you had the Islanders swept the Penguins.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but just even with those, it, just really good close games. And I was just praying for a little bit more overtime or something just to keep some of these games going. Just
that's
because.
The best.
And the goaltending is great. Just everybody is playing magnificent. You know,
I have a theory about why the Lightning and the Flames lost their series in the first round. It's because the two teams they played were playing playoff games basically the last month of the season to try to get
to
in.
To get into the right.
So they were playing their best hockey at that point, and you know Tampa had things clinched up. I think right after the opening faceoff of the season.
Yeah, right.
And you know Calgary kind of distanced itself from the field as well later in the year and didn't have to play a lot of meaningful games late. So there is something to that. I think just kind of a theory that I have, but I think that might hold some water.
Wild card momentum.
Yeah, because you're playing, you have to play your best hockey every night before you even get a chance to get into the dance. And once you're there, anything can happen, of course. And we have seen that anything can and will happen.
Yeah, well, it's been some great hockey, and I can't wait to, as we start moving things into the second round, it should be a lot of fun, a lot of fun. Explain to me how when the winds are blowing in at Wrigley, how Yu Darvish can give up home runs.
Okay, well, here's the explanation that I've had. And I used to support this theory. Oh, here's my another
theory.
Well,
another theory. This is welcome to Andy Gives Theories.
Let's disprove every one of my theories, which probably, you could probably do. When they redid the bleachers in 2006, they kind of raised them a little bit. And I always thought that because they raised the bleachers, there's a line that you can still hit the ball out where the wind does not affect it coming in, because the bleachers actually block it. Now you've got these two giant video boards in left field and in right field, where it's not the same in center because it actually comes through the sides, left center and right center, and will definitely affect the ball. But you don't see it as much in right field and in left field now because of the boards and the way the bleachers are configured. So I think that has something to do with it.
So the video boards are working against us.
Well, I mean, they should be in theory. That's again, there's another theory. It should be the same for both teams, shouldn't it?
Right. No, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. So if it's the same for both teams, then how come we only got three hits with off the starter and
That's why it's the starter, Zach Greinke. He was really good yesterday. Not to be surprised because he's a very good pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, and it was a very frustrating game to watch.
Yeah, he was not allowing any of the left-handers to get their arms out. He was tying everybody up inside. He wasn't throwing very hard. He was throwing about 88, 90. But again, you don't have to throw hard to be effective. It's about location, and he was keeping everything down. He never really got in trouble.
No, it. I mean, and the Cubs just couldn't get anything going.
Yeah, that's a problem. I mean, when you can't get any momentum at all against a starter, you start to feel like, I got to swing at something early because if I get late in the count, he's gonna take care of me. And sometimes you have to you expand your zone a little bit to try to hit that first pitch, and it just looked a little out of sync. And a good pitcher can do that to an offense.
So now, since you're giving theories, can you give me the theory on how Tim Anderson got thrown?
Let's see, you only have another hour and a half of your show here. I'll try to condense it as much as I can here. I guess I don't know really. The thought is that there was a word uttered in the fracas, the second part of that fracas, that was deemed racially charged. Apparently,
okay.
These are not proven concerns here. I mean, this is more of a report from several media outlets. And the thought is that Joe West may have heard one of those and decided that was enough. You break it down to its simplest form. Tim Anderson hit a home run, got plunked, and got ejected. There's no justice in that. Because if you want to stop a guy from celebrating, get him out.
Right. That's baseball.
And it's this old school mentality. And I do consider myself a baseball purist. I don't like the DH still, even though we're doing a lot of American League games right now. I still don't like it. I like you know, pure baseball the way it was supposed to be played. And I get the fact that people don't go to games to watch the pitcher struggle and bunt and all that kind of stuff. I get it. And you can save your emails because I understand that. But at the same time, these unwritten rules of baseball need to be published somewhere because they keep changing. And the old school mentality, and Ron Santo used to tell me this all the time. I mentioned this to John Williams yesterday. Batting behind Billy Williams was the most frustrating thing for Ron Santo because every time Billy Williams hit a home run, he was hitting the dirt on the next pitch.
Yeah, right.
And he knew it. And you go up there and you think that you're going to get dusted. So he already knew it. We kind of had a thought that something was going to happen because Anderson's had a little history with Kansas City going back to last year's opening series. He's had some issues with a couple of other pitchers, but because he plays the game with such an enjoyment and he celebrates it.
Right.
And he was not trying to show up Kansas City. He was throwing his bat towards his own dugout, yelling, "Let's go," to his own dugout. And if you'll watch the video of the incident after it happened, he and Martin Maldonado, the catcher for the Kansas City Royals, seemed to have everything all worked out. Anderson was patting him on the chest protector, kind of like, okay, I get it, okay. Was walking to first, and that was perceived in the Kansas City dugout as something that was inflammatory.
I just don't get it. And part of it, too, it's Joe West.
Well, you know, I always say this, and I hate to repeat myself 1,000 times here, but Joe West retired 5 years ago, and no one told him.
Yeah.
And they keep letting him into games. And you can guarantee that if he's umpiring a series, there's going to be something that happens in that series that's going to be all about Joe.
Of course.
It's bad for the game.
It is. Yeah. It is. It's just, it would be nice if the MLB would acknowledge that.
Yeah, you know, it's the umpires union is pretty strong at this point. They've kind of been without a lot of supervision, let's put it that way, since the mid-2000s. When there was actually somebody there that was governing what the umpires did and was holding them accountable for missing calls and for things that they did and conduct on the field. But that is not there anymore.
No, not at all. Well, Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news. Andy has the latest sports, including the latest on who's umpiring where around the country, as well as plenty of theories as well.
I've got theories.
He's got theories. Producer Kassira is fielding your call. She's at 312-981-7200. You can also text us here at 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. We're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. And Engineer Bob is looking for the Easter eggs. Remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcasts at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. We're going to take a quick break on this Easter Sunday morning. This is the Sunday Spin.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. Happy Easter, happy Passover. Joining me now on the phone is Republican leader of the Illinois State Senate, Bill Brady, state senator from Bloomington. Leader Brady, good morning. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter, Rick. Good to be with you.
Thank you so much for joining me this morning. We've are getting close to the May crunch time. Obviously, legislature is on break right now, but we're getting close to May crunch time, end of session scheduled to be the end of May. We're still wondering about where's a budget where are some of the priorities that Democratic Governor J.P. Pritzker has outlined? And obviously, Republicans are a minority in the legislature, but still have some influence here. Where are we when it comes down to, you know, the budget-making process?
Well, our caucus members are going through that process every year. The Appropriations Committee hears the departments come in and hears where they're at. You know, we're focused on where we can cut waste and savings in the program and make it more efficient. That process is moving along. I would say in tune with everything else, some of the other big issues that the governor has put in his budget proposal, there are various working groups that are working through those. I would say it's time to start getting really serious about some of them, like if sports betting is going to materialize and if the revenues will be there. So there are things. We had a leaders meeting with the governor the week before we broke and talked about how we need to speed this up. We've got 5 weeks left of session and what we need to do. It's still our hope that we'll do some things to help create jobs, create a better business environment so that we can employ more people. That's really the only way we're ever going to solve the budget crisis in Illinois, given the challenges that we have. And it's still a crisis when the pensions absorb so much.
Well,
our revenues.
It seems like, obviously, the issue kind of sucking the oxygen out of everything else is the issue of the proposed constitutional amendment for a graduated rate income tax, something that Republicans are opposed to. I was kind of curious because, you know, when we had the governor laid out proposed rates under this kind of graduated rate structure, and then afterwards would talk about, well, this is all subject to negotiation. And I was curious, where's the negotiation?
Well, you know, that's a good point. So far, they seem to be where they're at. We don't believe that there are protections when we alter the Constitution for middle-income families. We've thought long and hard about this, and there just is nothing to keep a Democrat majority from the day after the citizens give them this power, if they do, and we don't believe that will happen, that there's any protection keeping the Democrats from raising the income taxes on middle income families. As I said in committee, the Democrat majorities have proven twice in the last couple years that they're willing to take a vote on raising income taxes. We believe that the solution to Illinois' budgetary problem, and frankly, our livelihood, is a better environment for workforce, but moving people off of government roles and onto private sector payrolls and creating revenue that way and a better livelihood. And we don't believe the threat of another tax increase is the best way to go. Now, I admit that they've outlined it in such a way that a lot of people might think that their taxes aren't going to go up. They've put it in a way that they claim 97% of the people will not see a tax increase. That's pretty attractive to a lot of people. But our Constitution, I think, has served us well. It's crafted in 1970. And the fear that they can have such an easy opportunity to raise taxes on middle-income families, we don't believe is a positive step for this state.
I mean, I've heard that argument being made about there's nothing that would stop a tax increase under that proposed constitutional amendment, but there's nothing that stops a tax increase right now.
You're right, but this just makes it so much easier to elevate taxes on middle-income families. And when we saw the last tax increase happen, we saw, I think it was reported by one of the special reporting study groups, that we lost more middle-income families than anything. And we can't afford to continue to lose middle-income producing families and the jobs associated with that. And this is, to us, reeks of a threat to that. You know, if they're really concerned about it, why not call Senator McConkie and Senator Ryder's constitutional amendment on requiring a supermajority to raise taxes like other states. Now, I'm not saying that's a negotiating point on the graduate income tax, but that'd be good for the state regardless. I sponsored that initiative approximately 10 years ago to give taxpayers protection in this state. Taxes are something that need to be taken seriously and not lightly. And we need to make it difficult on legislators and frankly, make them answer for raising taxes when they should be working on growing the economy and raising taxes through natural revenue growth.
Now, there are some people who argue that opponents of this are basically opponents of the graduated rate are actually fearful of taxes, of it being easier to raise taxes on the wealthy, because that's an easy target.
Yeah, this increase on the wealthy doesn't worry me as much as the potential increase in middle income. Now, I do believe, and I've sponsored an initiative like other states where there isn't a huge estate tax burden at the state level to keep people in this state. People who create jobs, it's important to keep them in. I think that's frankly a bigger threat on the ultra-rich than the rates that have been posed here. Again, we believe the middle-income families are our biggest threat in terms of our economic survival and keeping Illinois from continuing to lose people to other states.
You touched earlier on kind of these working groups that are going on, and you actually mentioned the issue of sports betting. It always, whenever you talk about wagering or gambling or whatever, that always seems to be this kind of elusive kind of goal among those who want to expand gambling, and obviously sports betting being the kind of the newest entry in this compared to things like more casinos, that kind of thing. Given the complexity of that issue, granted other states have already legalized it, but given the complexity of this issue, do you think it's realistic that that component will go through?
I do, and I don't think it's that complex. To tell you the truth, I think it's just going to take, frankly, probably our caucus is really coming together and getting focused on it and proving what the need and where it's going to go. Is it revenues that we can use for capital? Is it revenues that need to go into the budget? There's other issues, though, that add to this, and that is there are several locations, including, as I understand, Chicago and the new mayor's position, that they would like to see the same opportunities for gaming that other cities, Rockford, Chicago, other places would like to see that. I look at it, I think it's proven that in many cases, these are economic opportunities and entertainment opportunities that enrich a city. So I think we need to look at a more comprehensive approach to making the most out of that industry and its effect on Illinois. So I don't think sports betting is that complex. The question is, do we think it should be owned and run like the lottery, or should we sell licenses? I think we need to look at both economic models and weigh the pros and cons of it. But I think this is something that can be done, and we certainly could use the resources. And frankly, if we don't do it, we know that Illinois residents are doing it somewhere, whether they drive to another state to do it or whether they do it illegally. And this is, I think, an absolute opportunity to make an industry legal and capture revenues and provide an entertainment value to people.
But should it be a component as part of a larger bill that, as you note, might include expanding casino gaming?
Yeah, I think, in speaking for those who support it in our caucus, I think we favor it being part of a larger, comprehensive approach to raise the most revenue and give cities the greatest opportunity. There's a lot of people who leave Chicago to go to Indiana to gamble. There's a threat of the Wisconsin casino that would drain, would move people over to drive to Wisconsin rather than Rockford. So there are some economic opportunities in the state that we can't ignore. And I think we've passed bills before. I think we can do something here that would enhance in our state economically, but also give us revenues and entertainment value that would bring more value to our state than what we even have now.
We're speaking to the Republican leader of the Illinois State Senate, State Senator Bill Brady of Bloomington. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the All-State Skyline studio. Joining me on the phone is Bill Brady. He is the state senator from Bloomington, who is the Republican leader of the Illinois State Senate. We're talking about issues going on in Springfield as we get ever closer to the scheduled end of May adjournment date. Senator, what about the issue of legalizing marijuana? It's got a revenue component, but others also say there's kind of a jobs and even criminal justice component to this. Is there a caucus position among the Senate Republicans on this?
No, and I'm not sure there is amongst any caucus. The there are Republicans who feel that if we're going to do it, we should have a voice in how it's done in my caucus, and I respect that. I have been asked by the governor to appoint members to a working group to try to make sure that it's done in what I would say the least harmful way. My personal opinion, and this is my personal opinion, is I haven't been convinced, although I understand marijuana sales are going on illegally, people are buying it, and there is a revenue component, and the product would be safer if regulated. But we still have this issue that it's not federally legal. Excuse me. And the harm that the medical community and, the, frankly, law enforcement tell me it creates far outweighs what I think would be good about making it legal. So I do believe there's a good chance that this will become part of Illinois' our situation. I'm very concerned about it, but I do respect the people who say if we're going to do it, let's have a seat at the table and make sure it's done in a way that is least harming as possible. I mean, I think there have been proven ways in which medical marijuana has been very helpful. I've been surprised at some of the results myself, having been opposed to that. I still have grave concerns about the legal implications of the federal law, but it has been helpful. But I don't think that a society needs a recreational adult cannabis to create a better society. But I do think it will happen. I do think there will be some revenues associated with it. I worry about, as I study other states, if the cost of it won't exceed the revenues. But we're continuing to work to make and learn from other states about how we can make legalized recreational cannabis least harmful to Illinois.
So when it comes to, like, you know, there's a number of members on a House resolution to kind of say, let's slow down on this. You're very much in that camp.
Very much so. I'm not going to support it. But I do think that a lot of thought needs to be put into it. Do I think they can put enough thought into it that it could be done by the end of session? Yeah, I do. I think there's still more to learn. But I think the concept that this needs to slow down and it needs to be studied is a good concept.
I'm curious as well about any progress towards a public works infrastructure capital bill.
Yeah, I think that is one area where we can all join in making something happen. Rick, I've never voted for a tax increase in my life, but the fact that we have a lockbox when it comes to road projects now, a protection that you can't sweep monies that were raised to invest in our infrastructure away to other programs, gives me some confidence. I've had lengthy discussions with members of the General Assembly, from leadership to rank and file of the governor. Our roads and bridges and rail are crumbling to a point where we're not going to be able to repair them. We're going to have to rip them up and rebuild, and the cost of that is horrendous. As I said earlier in your show, the number one thing that will move Illinois forward is creating jobs. That's where our real revenues, sustainable revenues, come from. We have a great advantage economically with our geographical presence that we're not utilizing. We're one of the slowest growing states in the nation, yet we're in the center of this nation if not world's economy. And one of the problems we're having is that we're not utilizing that because our infrastructure is not up to speed. And so we're working diligently, members of my caucus are, diligently to get us back into a position where we're taking advantage of our geographical presence and our economic ability to use that infrastructure, not to mention the public safety aspect of it that's so important. So we're very serious about rolling up our sleeves, and we're working. There's been several meetings across the state. I hope to be very proud of an infrastructure bill that we pass this session that will take advantage of all the things that we have to offer and rebuild our infrastructure, providing safer roads, bridges, rail, and other things. When it comes to the non-horizontal, what we call vertical projects, I hope we can come up with some revenues for that too. I think, frankly, if medical marijuana and if recreational cannabis adult passes, that's a source. Sports betting and gaming could be a source for vertical construction as well.
What about as far as but transportation-related projects? How do they get funded?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's been a lot of discussion. A lot of ideas have been thrown. You know that the Illinois Chamber of Commerce has suggested increasing the motor fuel tax and reducing the sales tax, some fee-related options. There are various things. What I've said to the governor is we're interested in talking about where the revenues come from. We just need to define what the program's going to look like. And because what we really need is something that is sustainable, something that can be we can invest in on a relatively regular basis, not a huge chunk of money and then nothing, but regular basis of revenue that can maintain our roads and bridges and rail at an adequate level. And we know that there are no revenues in the current budget to do that, and we're certainly willing to discuss what needs to be done, but we need to see the scope of the program. That needs to be laid out.
It's almost like chicken and egg, isn't it, in some respects?
We've got a great Department of Transportation who can say, listen, the proper thing to do, the least costly way to maintain this is to invest this much each year for the next 30 years. And they need to lay that out so that we're not, you know, chasing our tail all the time, but we have a long-term sustainable plan. And Republicans are willing to, because we know in the long run, monies we invest in our infrastructure are monies that will save us in other areas because our economy is going to flow much better and provide natural revenue growth through job creation.
So what about something like a gas tax increase, but finally maybe indexing that to inflation or the cost of motor fuel, something so that it doesn't have to be, you know, what's the last time?
You're right to the point. When you also got to factor in, is there going to be technological advances where you won't need as many gallons of gas to drive as many miles? So that's absolutely to the point that we have to factor in. To be true to the voters and the people and to creating a greater economy, the revenues have to match with the needs. And they've got to be done in the most efficient way. And you can't ignore the fact that there's going to be advances in efficiency on mileage. There's going to be advances in electronic vehicles. You know, we've got a great plant, Rivian Motors, that's advancing electric vehicles. We've got to realize those are going to become more and more part of what we see on the roads, and we've got to figure out a plan where everyone pays equally.
And that's just down the road from you, Rivian. So
it's a great success story. They're really they're going to be modeling some of their new cars and showing them at the plant this I think the end of May. And we're excited about the opportunity we have here in Illinois to really be part of the future of automobile industry.
That's Illinois State Senate Republican Leader Bill Brady of Bloomington. Senator, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Rick, good to be with you, and I hope your listeners enjoyed Passover and are enjoying Easter today, and we look forward to doing good things in Springfield this May and concluding on time and getting things moving in Illinois. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Senator.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. Well, we finally had the long-awaited release of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report on Russian interference in the 2016 election in the Trump campaign. Mueller said he couldn't make a determination on collusion since he would apply the, quote, framework of conspiracy law, not the concept of collusion. Now, for his part, President Trump claimed the report exonerated him.
I'm having a good day, too. It was called No Collusion, No Obstruction.
But only a day later, Trump was on Twitter complaining of, quote, BS, unquote, and lies in the Mueller report. The report was far from an exoneration. The report laid out several instances of a willingness of a Trump campaign wanting to utilize help from Russia. You have Paul Manafort routinely sharing poll data with the Russian oligarch. And as for obstruction of justice, Mueller didn't make a determination and basically left it for Congress to decide. And here's what Mueller's report said, quote, if we had confidence after a thorough investigation of the facts that the president clearly did not commit obstruction of justice, we would so state. Based on the facts and the applicable legal standards, we are unable to reach that judgment. Accordingly, while this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him, unquote. On CNN, Nixon White House counsel John Dean, instrumental in bringing down a presidency, said the Mueller report was more damning than previous investigations.
I looked on my shelf for the Senate Watergate Committee report. I looked at the Iran-Contra report. I also looked at the Ken Starr report, which is too big to bring to the set here. It's four volumes, over 2,000 words. And I've got to tell you, I've read all those. And in 400 words, this report from the special counsel is more damning than all those reports about a president.
That's John Dean. Now, some Democrats are talking about impeachment. Elizabeth Warren, presidential candidate. Democrats control proceedings in the House. Democrat Jerome Nadler, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, told George Stephanopoulos on ABC's Good Morning America about the next steps his committee will take.
I believe he committed obstruction of justice, yes, but it's not up to me. It's up to...
You're the chairman of the Judiciary Committee.
Yeah,
you can open impeachment proceedings.
Well, we have to, but we're not there. We have to now, because the special process, because Barr misled the country, we have to hear from Barr, which we will on May 2nd. We have to hear from Mueller and ask him a lot of questions. We have to hold hearings and hear from other people, both on the question of obstruction of justice, where, as I said, the special prosecutor invited Congress to look into that, not the Attorney General. We have to look into all that. We need the entire report, unredacted, and the underlying documents in order to make informed decisions.
That's Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Jerome Nadler. We're going to move things back more locally here in Illinois. My guest now is Bill Fleishley, Executive Vice President of the Illinois Petroleum Marketers Association, Illinois Association of Convenience Stores. Bill, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me.
I don't know if you had a chance to listen to Senate Republican Leader Bill Brady in the previous segment talking about capital funding. Obviously, your organization very concerned about issues such as raising of the gasoline tax, but that's something that Senator Brady indicated is something that it's possible that could get his support as part of a capital plan because of the transportation lockbox requiring that those monies go to improve roads and bridges.
Well, they ought to know, somebody ought to realize that we spend $9.6 billion on roads in 2017. State and local expenditures for highways, $9.6 billion. Only two states were higher, California and Texas. That was above the national average. I think we ought to find out where we're spending it, how we're spending it, before we do anything. And also back in the 2017 era, 2016, they took over $300 million out of the construction funds and used it for general revenue. I think that's being, I don't want to say fake, but it's kind of lying to the public. They come in, they buy fuel, and they think they're going to, that these taxes are going to roads. They're not. I know that the new amendment's supposed to change that. but we ought to pay back what they took in some way, shape, or form before you ask them to almost reach $1 a gallon for taxes.
Well, I mean, as Senator Brady indicated, there's a lot of support. I mean, you're in Springfield. You know, there's a lot of talk this time around for a capital bill, and you know where they come gunning for the revenue.
But the people, according to a recent poll by AAA, 74% of the Illinoisans do not support a raising the tax on motor fuel to make improvements in infrastructure. They have to look outside the box, and we have to come together and find out if we need to raise revenues and where we should raise them.
What about as far as, and Senator Brady touched on this, the fact there was the Chamber of Commerce, state chamber proposal that would exchange support for a gasoline tax increase for a reduction or phasing out of the state sales tax on gasoline?
Well, I think that's front-end loaded. We'd certainly like to look at that. We took the sales tax off gasoline in 2000 for 6 months and saw volumes explode around the state of Illinois. We'd certainly like to look at that. However, though, how are they going to do that? That's a revenue source that goes to general revenue. We think it ought to go to roads. How are they going to do that to make up the difference in general revenue? We're not at the table. And I've talked to Senator Brady, and I think we should be at the table, at least giving our viewpoints as to what happens when you raise these taxes. Every time we raise taxes, volumes go down about 6% over 3 years, and they don't start to recover over until about 3 or 4 years. We drive people, we make the borders wider, and when you do that, people go across, and they not only buy gasoline, they will buy ancillary items, and we lose sales tax revenue there. I mean, we've lost 400 stations in the last 3 or 4 years, and we've lost about 9,000 employees. Now, that's a big number. People should look at that. That's a small business going away in Illinois, and it's just like everything else. People are driving people, enticing people to go across borders to buy their fuel and their other products.
Well, Bill, when you say lost 400 stations, what's the universe of stations that we're talking about?
4,700. We had 5,100. We employed 91,000 people. We had 5,100. We now employ about 44,000. We lost 4,000. Yeah, we've lost 400 stations. We lost 9,000 employees.
Are those primarily around border locations?
Most are in high tax areas. Most are in the higher tax areas.
So, like suburban Cook, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think, and I don't know my words anymore, I think as you go across the Skyway,
right,
isn't that the 13th Ward or the 16th Ward? So I don't think there's a gas station in those areas. They all go to Indiana and Indianapolis Boulevard. They're the two highest volume stations in the United States.
We're speaking with Bill Fleishley, Executive Vice President of the Illinois Petroleum Marketers Association, Illinois Association of Convenience Stores. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. We're speaking with Bill Fleishley. He's the Executive Vice President of the Illinois Petroleum Marketers Association, Illinois Association of Convenience Stores. We're talking about his organization's concerns about, these discussions about raising the state's gasoline tax, motor fuel tax, as part of a comprehensive capital improvement bill. And, Bill, in the previous segment, you mentioned about a number of stations declining, and we had a texter who wondered how much of that was actually due to station consolidation and more of a larger companies kind of moving in.
Well, those are the national. I want to tell you that those aren't my numbers. Those are the National Association of Convenience Stores. We had 5,400 stations in 2015, and then 2017 we had 4,700, employed 71,000, and we and 90,000 in 2016 and 71,000 now. Consolidation, that's certainly part of it, but not the whole thing. And if you have a station that's in a position to make, it's a profitable station, they're not going to close it. So there's some reason why they're closing. Volumes are down because taxes are high. That's most of the people they get out of business because their volumes drop. And that's what happens when you have raising taxes. It's I mean, you can see it in any volume oriented product, gasoline, cigarettes, those things go away. And the driving public is still out. We still have a lot of people on the roads, but if they're not getting the right price, they're going to go elsewhere.
Well, and I mean, it's recognized that the profit margins on a gallon of gas are very small.
Yeah, and they don't go up when the price goes up. That's the bad thing. When the prices are up around $4 a gallon, everybody thought we made more. We still made the 10 to 15 cents a gallon. They just don't go up. The market won't let the margins go up.
Okay, we talk about gasoline taxes. Also, Governor Pritzker's proposed budget contains a proposed 32-cent increase in the state's cigarette tax.
Yeah, that's another reason that will entice people to go across borders to buy things. And we also have already had a minimum wage fee put on us. They also have moved the 21 smoking bill and passed it. So this industry, this small industry, is small business, is really, really, really being assaulted this year.
I mean, you didn't mention the plastic bag tax.
Yeah, I forgot about that. That's another one. And our customers, the people that use them, are going to be inconvenienced, and they're not going to be happy about it. All these things are, I mean, just think about it. Think about it. A minimum wage increase costs you $100,000 a store, probably, at least. That's what tax numbers are. Now you're going to you're going to decrease your volume of cigarettes, you're going to decrease your volume of gasoline. How can you survive? It's very, very difficult to survive.
So, well, I mean, but some of these have been forces that, you know, your groups have been able to withstand before.
Yes, but we didn't withstand them 100%. When I started, about 93 or 94, we had 1,200 distributors in Illinois. We're under 400 now. So they're disappearing. The smaller guy that helped the farmer and helped this and helped that, he's been eliminated. He's on the endangered species if he isn't eliminated.
Let's talk about rural Illinois too, and obviously the economy in rural Illinois is not good, convenience stores are somewhat of a lifeblood of those communities. I mean, what are the economic conditions like downstate?
Well, they're just as damaging. I mean, Chicago, at least you have people there. We have less people, and they will go further. I mean, and I've said this before, in Quincy, Illinois, there's a town called West Quincy. It has no population. It's got 8 gas stations, and their volumes are 3 times or 4 times higher than the Quincy, Illinois, both in cigarettes and gasoline sales. That's because the people go over. And they find now that even the volumes of 50 miles away drop when the prices go up. If people they have a routine. They will go to Quincy on Saturday, get their gasoline in Missouri, and then come back and get their, do other things. It's a routine that people will do, and we make it easy because we put the price out. You can selectively buy your gasoline and win the price when you drive by the stations. And when you raise the price, I mean, Missouri's different. They have 17 cents a gallon and no sales tax, so it's about 20 cents, 22 cents a gallon difference between Missouri and Illinois. See, and that's a early enticement. I mean, it's they're closing all the time. You go into Quincy, a lot of stations are closing, especially ones that are close to the border.
So you say you don't have a seat at the table in these discussions.
I've had one conversation at a political event with the Chamber of Commerce, just a conversation, and they were friendly, but no, we've not been asked to do anything.
Which I don't understand, because I mean, you're a known figure around the State House.
Well, yeah, and I would think any other business group that's been affected by these taxes should be at the table.
And so you talked to the chamber. You haven't spoken with any of the leaders at all on this.
Oh, I've talked. I had an informal conversation with Bill Brady. No, but the leaders have not addressed us yet.
Well, watch as things develop. It's going to be a busy month of May in Springfield, and I know that you'll be part of it. Bill Fleischley, Executive Vice President of the Illinois Petroleum Marketers Association and the Illinois Association of Convenience Stores. Bill, thanks for joining me this morning.
Thank you, because this will probably help us get a little bit involved now.
Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Heard an interesting remark on a Christian radio podcast. Former Minnesota Congresswoman and one-time Republican presidential contender Michelle Bachmann, in this podcast, called Donald Trump the most biblical of presidents.
In my lifetime, I have never seen a more biblical president than I have seen in Donald Trump. He has so impressed me with what he's done. And we haven't even talked about Israel,
what he has done to advance Israel.
Is highly biblical. And I would say to your listeners, we will in all likelihood never see a more godly, biblical president again in our lifetimes. So we need to be not only praying for him, we need to support him, in my opinion, in every possible way that we can.
That's a former Minnesota Congresswoman and Republican presidential contender, Michelle Bachmann. Well, we're going to bring things back local again here. And joining me here in the Allstate Skyline studio is Christina Castro. She's Democratic State Senator from Elgin. Senator, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Rick. Thanks. It's great to be here.
And I hope you're enjoying the beautiful views on this Sunday morning.
It is a very beautiful, sunny Chicago view. It's pretty neat to see the Navy Pier skyline from over here. I haven't been up to the city, this studio yet, so it's actually pretty impressive.
Well, I'm glad to have you in today. And wanted to talk to you about the issue of the Kids Act, the Keep Internet Devices Safe Act. And I mean, what prompted this? The bill has passed the Senate.
Correct.
What does it really entail? And are there still kind of some of these efforts to try to water it down?
So actually, so what the bill entails, a lot of folks have probably been watching and been very sensitive to the issue of privacy, especially in regards to internet privacy, privacy on their cell phones, privacy on their
just in
wires.
General, yes. it's a very topical issue.
Correct. Recently, there was an article that talked about how Amazon employees were actually listening to recordings from the Alexa, from Alexa, and they were actually sharing them in a work chat.
Don't use that word. You're going to set off people's devices. Bloomberg News, I believe, did this story.
Correct.
And Amazon was saying, well, there are recordings that get transcripted to try to make the device work better. It's a process to make the device work better. And while they tried to say that they didn't identify who the voices were, but they knew which device it was doing. So ostensibly, if they know the device, they know who owns the device.
Correct. The one thing that's interesting, though, is for consumers to understand is the microphone is always on. Just because an item's not being used doesn't mean the
just
item
because
goes
the blue
it.
Ring is
correct.
Not on doesn't
so,
mean
so Amazon will tell you it records all that and it keeps it in a database on your profile, and they tell you can delete it, and there's nothing wrong with that. But the idea is what my bill does is it makes it transparent. If they're going to collect such information or inaudible sounds as they claim to better the device, that's fine, but they need to disclose how they collect it, when they collect it, when they use it. And you as the consumer have to be aware of that in the terms and conditions. And once you accept those terms and conditions, then they're covered. But what we're finding is there are instances where the microphone gets turned on its own without even the user accepting the terms. If you have an iPhone, for example, and you open a new application, sometimes it'll ask you permission. May I use the microphone? You can say allow access or deny access. That is asking you and telling you the terms of service. Some applications don't do that. I will give you an example of one. So the Cleveland Cavaliers created this application. If you use it in its stadium, it was turning on the microphone without the user's consent or knowledge. And what it was looking for was inaudible sounds in the stadium. So that way it can pinpoint a location that you were at. Like if you were near a fan shop, if you were near a taco stand, it would pop up advertisements on that ad.
Based on the inaudible sounds.
Correct. Just because you were walking through the stadium, it could pinpoint with the snap of a finger exactly where you were at, and it would send you a message. So that's the thing that you got to be careful. But you're like, you didn't realize that's recording your voice or recording it. And many consumers are a little, obviously, concerned about that. Like, what else are these applications recording?
I mean, I would think a GPS would be a better locator for that kind of
you would think.
Service. Which, most apps have that option about whether you want
Correct.
The GPS to be functioning.
Correct. And to some credit, it's not everyone's a bad actor. You have some groups, and Apple does a really good job. Whenever Apple updates its own devices, anything that's owned by Apple, you will always get a new terms of service that you always have to agree to. Or it'll ask
you. But does anybody really read those terms of service?
I don't know. They should. You should.
Well, I mean, how many people just, you know, as you say, when the operating system gets updated, you know, you just click agree and move mm-hmm. on, right?
Right. But again, when you're dealing with your own digital privacy, you should, like, if no matter what app you buy, what digital device you're using, you should carefully look over and see what can be transmitted, not only for your safety, but for the safety of your family. You know, we've heard other devices that have been hacked into, you know, they could zero in or can recognize a child's voice or, you know, so there's a lot of maliciousness that's out there, too. So as a parent or as a user of a device, you should be very careful on how you subscribe to devices and know what they're recording and how.
Well, there was an FBI warning. And I mean, but what specifically was that warning about?
I think the FBI warning was in regards to the microphones, watching how your device captures that information, because it can pinpoint. People are smart. People are very smart, and they can figure out how, where, who you are. And so you need to be aware of those things, and need to be aware of how you accept terms and conditions, because they can affect your family. You've heard people who've, like, have hijacked a person's webcam and claim they could tell, for example, what you're wearing because they can see you from the webcam, and then say, well, if you don't give me $1,000 and wire it here, I know where your child's at. I'm going to kidnap your child because I know where he's in the house, what you're wearing, what he's wearing, so on and so forth. And people get frightened. They don't realize that these types of things happen. And so that's why it's imperative for when you talk about privacy and internet protection, is that all kinds of programs are transparent in how they use the device and how they're secure as well.
Have we given away too much of our privacy?
I think technology is a great thing. I think one of the things is because we're very comfortable with technology, it makes our life easier. I think we sacrifice some things for convenience, but it doesn't necessarily mean we have to sacrifice a lot of things. And so with my legislation, hopefully that'll help bring this to more transparency as far as what organizations, digital devices, apps are using and how they're using your information. And you have a right to know.
And what if there isn't that disclosure?
Well, here's where we're at, speaking of that. So the bill is, we are continuously working on the bill. It has passed the Senate. Representative Justin Slaughter is carrying it in the House. And I have been working with the tech industry a little bit to kind of narrow in the definitions, because some issues, which were a little broad, we've narrowed them in. But we've still made a very strong bill that'll help consumers understand what they're collecting, what is being collected, how it's being collected, and they will know via transparency. So that is our goal. We're continuing to work on it. But, you know, in some instances, I appreciate the tech industry is willing to talk on my bill, but there are several other bills carried by several other reps where they're still very uncomfortable about approaching, you know, public, you know, consumer protections and making sure the protecting people's privacy. One of the things is in the Senate, Senator Steve Stadelman wanted to do a just kind of a subject matter hearing on the topic of digital privacy, and the tech industry will have nothing of it. They don't want to partake in it. They just don't want people to know what and how they're collecting people's data. Sell your data to market research firms, as you've seen, Facebook being the biggest one. Sometimes, as you know, it's really easy for us. It says, hey, use your Facebook login. But as soon as you use your Facebook login to log in an app, to log into any different website, Facebook is now, you have already agreed to the terms and conditions that Facebook's going to start monitoring your algorithm. So when you see specific advertising on Facebook, you're probably wondering, well, how does it know I'm looking at that? It's because you've been searching through the internet.
Right. And so all of a sudden now you're getting those selected advertisements that are targeted.
Correct.
And I mean, it's all about the data.
Right.
It's a
multi-billion dollar business.
Yeah. That's the world we now live in.
Correct.
We're speaking with State Senator Christina Castro, Democrat from Elgin. We're talking about internet privacy. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, speaking here in the Allstate Showcase studio with State Senator Christina Castro, Democrat from Elgin. We've been talking about internet privacy and her bill, the Kids Act, which is mainly designed to try to provide some transparency from internet companies for devices that they have connected to the internet, which also have microphones to them. Mm-hmm. And we were speaking off air because I have my device that is very convenient. And I mean, I guess that's the struggle I have is we're getting more dependent on the technology these days. And everything in life's a trade-off.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to give away my privacy, but yet, as you say, what your bill would make this part of terms of service. So you clearly understand, you know, you are giving up certain things.
Right.
But I don't know, in general, people understand what they're giving up. I mean, as we said, data is everything. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. It's the reason some of these people, you know, have apps. It's not so much what the app does as much it is to collect data,
right,
that they can sell. I mean, I'm frustrated myself at times with social media. As a journalist, I depend on it. We kind of use it to get the word out. But there again, it's a trade-off of being in certain social media settings, what I'm giving up, mm-hmm, just for the ability to try to help my business and my profession.
It is a complex thing, and I know when you deal with that, I don't think you have to sacrifice your privacy. I think knowing what you are sharing will help you make a better decision whether you choose to use a certain app. I know you and I were talking offline. You could still use the Alexa, but one of the things, I unplug mine when I'm not using it. I know, like, everyone would be like, well, what's the convenience of it? One thing is, if you know it's recording you, you can choose to continue to let it record you. Amazon will show you and show you and walk you through where you can go erase that history. If you're comfortable and with something recording you, then you already know that it's being recorded, and then you can move them on about your lives. The only thing is, a lot of people don't realize that. They don't realize it's recording even when you don't have it playing music
or when the blue light is flashing.
TV or whatnot. I think the other thing is there's several other privacy bills. One is Representative Art Turner's bill. And really what it does is it will help consumers once a year understand what type of information has been collected for them, so they can kind of see that. But then it also show some more transparency in, like, what are the companies doing with that information? Like, what marketing firms, who are they selling it to? So again, you can make an educated choice of which product you choose to use, and if you are okay with them collecting the data, and if you are okay with them selling it to different groups.
See, I'd find a great interest in what we talk about. It's all about the data. But what is the data?
Mm-hmm.
What are they collecting?
It varies. It varies from company to company. Some will collect basic information, which is fine. Some do it right, like they get your name, where your address, your city, the basic demographic information. But some really go very far. Some could identify everything from what you like to eat, when you eat, what time you eat, where you go at a certain times. It starts identifying your patterns. So if you have any kind of patterns, like you get on the blue line at 5 o'clock, certain things like that, it'll start really zeroing in on those really nuances that are personal to you. And sometimes you're just like, okay, that's a little bit too much encroaching on my space.
Well, we had a text come in, and it was somebody who said that an experience at a Chicago theater, and Google Maps knew where they were located at, and as they were entering a theatrical production, they got a prompt saying that, you know, your phone's not silenced.
So there you go. I mean, and that's...
I mean
that's nice and convenient, but you're kind of like, okay, that's way too much information for something Google Maps to tell me. Oh, your phone's not on.
TMI here.
Yeah, exactly.
You say you're still working with the industry.
Yes,
I'm
not sure where they are with. There's, I think, two other pieces of legislation that have come from the House into the Senate. Those two, I believe, are being carried by Senator Tom Cullerton. I know there was an initial discussion this past week on those bills, but I think the tech industry is starting to ramp up. I think they have serious concerns on Art Turner's bill. And one of the things is, as a senator, I'm willing to hear all sides of an issue, whether it's the opposition, the proponents, and try to kind of find some middle ground on some issues without losing the intent of the bill. I want the intent of the bill to be about transparency, protecting consumers. And so I'll give the tech industry credit. Most of them have been working with me in fine-tuning some of what are the definitions. But there are many instances where they don't want it. I mean, you obviously look across the country, and the tech industry, they're a powerful lobby. They can throw lots of money at lots of people, and they could kill predominantly a lot of the legislation that's out there. So we're going to continue to work. I'm optimistic that we will get it through the House and we'll get it to the governor's desk. But, I mean, this is something that consumers should be mindful of as they're selecting devices, as they're using applications. Like you said, if it's able to track you're walking into a theater and telling you to turn your phone off, is that how much information you want an application to have about your life? Or if you're going to walk into a bathroom, I mean, it's like, when is enough information? We understand giving you sign up for technology and you should give up some information. That's part of your accepting that. But how much is too much? And so what we're doing with my bill, with Senate Bill 1719, is making sure that companies are transparent about it and how they're collecting it. And so that way, whenever a user goes to say, do I accept the terms and conditions after reviewing that? Or do I say, I don't really need that app?
So we're coming close to crunch time.
Yes.
And, you know, what's the fear that something like this may get lost in that end of session kind of shuffle?
I think one of the things is that Representative Slaughter and I are going to work very diligently. Obviously, we're in district for the next this upcoming week as well. But once we get back down there, we're going to sit down with everybody again and continuing moving it forward. We had some great progress the last 2 weeks of our Senate deadline. There's a few outstanding issues that we need to continue to work on. And then I think we're almost there. So I'm optimistic that at least my bill will be ready to go and ready for a floor, committee and a floor vote in the House. So
that's State Senator Christina Castro, Democrat from Elgin. Senator, thank you so much for joining me here in studio this morning.
Thanks, Rick. This was great.